Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for September 19th, 2010. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello.
Yes, good to have you here. And I think we'll be having Amy Morton as our special guest momentarily from Georgia Women Vote and Blog for Democracy. We couldn't have Tim on this week. He is in an undisclosed location. Apparently, Catherine, Tim has been taking vacation tips from Dick Cheney.
I think so.
That's all
He's
I
at an
tell,
undisclosed
but,
location with no cell phone coverage and no internet.
Yeah,
bravo
but
for
may,
him.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see Tim take a week off. I mean, Tim is the Iron Man of the Kudzu Vine, so he deserves a week off. And I bet Tim won't miss another show between now and Election Day, and then they'll tell him how many after that. But he's going to get rested up, and that way people can appreciate him for the next 2 months leading up to this election. But I guess we're going to have a ton of Georgia news because it just seemed like one thing after another this week in Georgia politics. But Georgia wasn't the only state making news. We have Delaware making news, which is not a southern state, but they had comparisons to South Carolina in that race. We had Kentucky making news, a new poll in Arkansas. Texas, in response to the poll we talked about last week, there's been moves in that governor's race. But one that really kind of caught my attention was the Florida race, and I think I'll kind of kick this whole thing off by letting us listen to a new Kendrick Meek ad and then seeing what's coming out of that and then talking about how that's affecting poll numbers. But let's listen up, Catherine.
Okay.
I'm Kendrick Meek, candidate for Senate, and I approve this message.
Home is where the heart is, and for Charlie Crist, home is with the GOP.
I'm a Jeb Bush Republican. I was impressed at Governor Palin being picked. I watched her speech today. I was very impressed.
John McCain was a great candidate and a dear friend.
President Bush is a leader of courage and conviction.
And Crist on the issues.
I'm as bad as conservative as you can get.
The facts are perfectly clear. I'm proud of my pro-life record.
And Crist on offshore oil drilling.
I think it's something we ought to explore.
Now Charlie Crist is running for Senate as an independent. Well, he still unequivocally supports extending the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. Don't be fooled. If Charlie Crist gets to Washington, his heart will lead him right back where he belongs.
I think it's important for people to understand who the true conservative is in this race, and it's Charlie Crist.
Paid for by Kendrick Meek for Florida.
Okay, well, that ad was about a minute long. Catherine, tell us your thoughts on that ad.
Well, it was pretty hard-hitting. I'm kind of surprised that he's going after Charlie Crist. I mean, I think he has to. He's sort of, I think those Charlie Crist numbers are the ones that he wants. He's not going to probably get anything from Marco Rubio, so he needs to go after the Charlie Crist voters to get it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a three-way race, and you got to look at it like Neapolitan ice cream. If the chocolate touches the strawberry and the strawberry touches the vanilla, the chocolate can't really take from the vanilla. It only can take from the strawberry. And Charlie Crist is in that middle there. And so, it's an ad that will help Meek. It will hurt Crist, but help Crist, I think. And that's what I think.
I mean, I think it might help him to remind people that he is a conservative and he has backed Republicans throughout his career, but it might hurt Rubio as well.
And through Crist, and that's the tricky politics that Kendrick Meek has to play. I mean, he can just hit Crist, bring him down, and then Rubio get more of the vote, and Rubio wins, big deal. Doesn't help Crist, doesn't help the Democratic Party, helps nothing. But if he can somehow build up his numbers, which he had about a 2 to 3 point gain in this last poll, start to slowly build those numbers up to around 30, 32%. Actually, I guess he'd need about 33 unless there's a Green Party or Libertarian candidate. He'd need to build those numbers up somewhere in the mid-30s, his own numbers. then take Crist, take the left numbers from him, the Democrats that may be saying, hey, Crist has the best shot to win, push then Crist into Rubio, where it carves off some of Rubio's vote, and that's the bad news in this poll. Rubio's gone up from 33 to 40. Crist has gone from 38 to 26. Pretty much right now, the numbers move looks like Republicans saying, okay, Crist isn't a Republican, I have nothing to do with him, I'm going to Rubio, and if this line continues, it's game, set, match.
Except the undecideds went up from 10 to 13%. So something's going on with the undecideds.
Yeah, something a little bit's going on, but the biggest movement you'd have to say was, I mean, Rubio was up 7.
Well, that's true.
Crist was down 12. So basically, you pushed that in the undecided vote. So and then Meek went up. So it's more people getting, you know, fuzzier on Charlie Crist.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, he is the governor, which, you know, state government being the head of that and being the bearer of bad news, may not be the best place for somebody to be running for office either. And maybe because if he has changed some of his positions, maybe people don't see him as more moderate or more conservative. They just see him as wishy-washy, which is not good for anybody of any political party.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's – but once again, the race stays fascinating. Now, if these numbers start to get firm – and Rubio, which right now, if this poll were, you know, set in stone, he would have a 14-point lead over Charlie Crist, a 19-point lead over Kendrick Meek. We'd almost have to take Florida out of the top spot unless the governor's race by itself could hold up. But I don't think we're there yet, do you?
No. I think there's still time to recover some of those numbers for Meek and for Crist to lose some traction as well. And plus,
yeah,
he's got 13% undecided, so.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not a huge number, but it's a number that can move. And then if you look at the Alex Sink, Rick Scott race, the biggest thing that happened there is they stopped polling on Childs. And then Alex Sink and Rick Scott, I mean, it's a margin of error race. She was 2 points down with Childs in the race, but now she's 2 points down without Childs, who was a, you know, a Democrat running as an independent. I was kind of surprised that she wasn't in the lead even without the margin of error, weren't you?
Yeah, but it's still really tight, so. And we've got, you know, 45 days or 43 days or something.
Yeah, I mean, I would feel better about her chances than Kendrick Meek's. I mean, and I said this before, right now the Republicans hold that Senate seat, the Republicans hold the governor's office. If at the end of the day Florida Democrats win the governor's mansion, don't win the Senate seat, that's still a good day.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we'd take it in
Georgia. That's a very good day this year.
Yeah, I mean, they take it in Alabama. They take it in South Carolina. I mean, we can name southern state after southern state that's the case, that they're looking to win, you know, two offices, but if they got a split, Democratic Party in that state would be happy. So let's go ahead and go to another state before we get to Georgia, and I bet a lot of people are waiting for our Georgia talk, but in Texas, the governor's race, we noted last week that polls had shown that race had tightened up significantly. What was it, maybe a 4-point race?
Yeah, it's very, very tight.
It had gotten really, really tight. Well, Rick Perry has unleashed 3 negative ads on Bill White. Mainly they go after Bill White's record as Houston mayor, talking about having to spend money, although in Houston they had the effects of Hurricane Katrina with a lot of new residents that didn't probably bring a lot of new tax dollars, and then the recession. Do you think those attacks are going to be that effective?
I don't. But you know what I thought was the most interesting thing about that article that you forwarded to me was the fact that Rick Perry has refused to do a debate.
Yeah.
And I looked into that a little bit, and it turns out that he's demanding that What's the opponent's name? Why can't I remember?
Bill White, Mayor
White. that he provide his tax returns from, like, going back many years. He's already released some of them. And Perry hasn't released some of the his financial information. He's released his tax returns, but not his sources of income and some other information. But I think it's really interesting that Perry is, you know, basically they're saying now that there's not going to be any debate between those two candidates before the election. I mean, it seems to me that if you're the sitting governor and you want the position back, you should be able to stand up and defend what you've done and talk about it.
Well,
I thought that was
so
really
light, interesting. I'd follow Perry around with a flatbed truck with, you know, two microphones or megaphones. I don't know if you remember in 98, Guy Milner challenged Roy Barnes to debate, because Fuller was saying, well, Guy Milner didn't want to debate because he can't out-debate Roy Barnes. And then Roy Barnes jumped on there and did very well. But it was a way to try to, you know, highlight the debate issue. If I was Bill White, I'd follow Rick Perry all around. Every time that it was some joint meeting, I'd challenge him right there until you finally got a debate out of him, if he's scared of debate. Well, I guess it's time to welcome our guest host, Amy. You there with us?
I am. I'm so sorry that I am late. I don't think you can be late to be a host of a radio program, but I think I've done that tonight. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're fine, Amy. We always find things to talk about. No problem.
Yeah, we talked a little Florida, and we're taking care of Texas. But now that you're on with us, we'll talk a little Georgia talk. And first thing, I know that you had been one of the heads of a blog called Georgia Women Vote, and now there's a new site called Georgia Women Vote. What can you and Catherine both tell us about this?
Well, I can tell you that I have loaned the name for the purpose of the coordinated campaign. We believe very strongly that women will be the majority of the electorate in November, and that's actually women have actually been undersampled in some of the recent polls, by the way. For example, the poll that came out early last week that showed Deal with the Big Lead had sampled more men voting than women in the election in November. That hasn't happened in Georgia in quite some time, and I don't anticipate it happening in November. In particular, we believe that independent women are persuadable women who look hard at candidates and make decisions based on who they think is going to be the best decision maker in office. And we want to make sure that we get information to those women about our candidates, because we believe we have a strong slate from the governor all the way to public service commissioner.
Yes, and so I guess it's mainly backing three state-level candidates, and then is it also backing House and Senate candidates to the local level?
There are, yes. The coordinated campaign actually touches every Democrat, because we're working on turnout among both turnout among our base and persuasion motivation in some selected constituency universes like women. Now, women are a large constituency, of course, but we know that the more women who go to the polls to vote, the better chances for all the Democratic candidates on the ballot this fall, and that's because of what I said. Independent women tend to really be open and looking at who the best candidate is, and are in a good position to have a voice in this election, and maybe the pivotal voice in this election.
Yeah.
So the purpose of the outreach is to reach them, get them information. We're also planning house party events around the state as we in the run-up to the election, and you can sign up to do that activity on the site. And there's a social media component to it as well, and a direct voter contact component.
Yes. Now, I know you were pretty vocal, and I believe correctly so, that the Republicans kind of gave the Democratic Party this opening when the Republicans had two female candidates make the runoff, Karen Handel and Maria Sheffield, and both lost when they had led, I guess, on the first primary day. Do you think that we could have run the same campaign from the Democratic perspective had one or both of those ladies won?
I think that it would be, the message would be somewhat different, frankly. I don't think that you can make the case that women vote just based on gender, otherwise Hillary Clinton would be president right now. but I do think that gender is a factor, and I think that our ticket is much more diverse in terms of geography, gender, and race than the Republican ticket, which that from the top to the bottom looks very homogeneous. And I think our ticket looks a lot more like Georgia. I do think that there are key issues that the women that I know are very concerned about, including this whole issue that I heard y'all talking about when I jumped on about the need for candidates to be open with the electorate. I think that if you want to have one of the top leadership positions in the state, that you make yourself open to scrutiny.
Yeah, Catherine, do you have any comments or questions on this initiative?
Well, I think it's fantastic, and I think the site looks great, and I know that people, there's a lot of people working very hard behind the scenes to, you know, sort of support these women candidates, and they're, the three that are running statewide are all really great candidates. They all have very distinct histories of service, and as well as distinctive personalities and characteristics that I think make them really dynamic candidates and will and dynamic leaders should they be elected. So I think it's a, I think it was really smart to take make the effort to highlight them, and I hope that we can you know continue to do that. I think looking at the races in the state, especially the statewide races, I think that highlighting Carol Porter, Georgiana Sinkfield, and Mary Squires is a way to sort of persuade some of the independent voters, like Amy said, to take another look at the Democrats. And then once we get them to take a look at these three great women candidates, persuade them that for them to really have the best effect, we also need to elect Governor Barnes. So I think that it's a really smart strategy, and I'm really excited about it. I think it's I'm of the opinion, along with a lot of people, that visuals have a lot to do with it, and I think the visuals are really, really dynamic. And just as a little aside, this afternoon I went to the Carter Center to see this Freedom Sisters exhibit that they have, and this week they're also highlighting some women who have served and provided leadership in the civil rights movement and just sort of the movement for women in Georgia. And I really recommend everyone, if you have the chance, to go check out that exhibit. It really shows the importance of women in our country and how the impact that they've had on our history. And many of them you've never heard of and you may never hear of unless you go to that exhibit.
Yes, I've read about that. I've heard that it's wonderful.
It was wonderful. Yeah. And of course, it's always a joy to go to the Carter Center. Yeah.
And if I can just tag on that one quick thing to note that the chair of the coordinated campaign is Mayor Shirley Franklin, and, of course, you know, on party chair is Jane Kidd. We've not been shy about women being in leadership in the Democratic Party. It's not a new idea for us. There are actually 66 women who are running for state-level office on the Democratic ticket this time, and I think that that's House, Senate, or statewide office. That's the most we've ever had in one election, and I think that bodes well for the future for the party. And many of these women are such skilled leaders and very experienced. We also have some new faces who have great potential. So there's every reason for women to be excited about this ticket.
Yes, well, we'll be watching that effort. And the website, I guess, will have a lot of the initiatives. I'm sure Blog for Democracy will be keeping up that as well. Staying in Georgia, you mentioned, I guess, at the start of the week or maybe even before, like last weekend, we didn't go into it, and There was a poll put out by 11 Alive News, B103, bad methodology aside. The first thing you see is, oh, my goodness, this race has opened up to a double-digit lead for Nathan Deal. He's over 50%. I believe Governor Barnes was under 40. I mean, it was just horrible looking. It was
right.
So bad. I saw on some of the Republican blogs, they were kind of saying, down, guys, this is too good to be true.
You know, and it was.
Control. And so you get this. And then from there, I guess it was around Tuesday, Nathan Deal's terrible financial situation comes out.
Well, the first part of it came out.
Yeah, the first part, the part where he owes the loans and his house may, you know, repossessed, what do you want to say, foreclosed on because of the outdoor world business venture that his son-in-law and daughter got into. When y'all saw that, Catherine, what did you make of that?
Well, I mean, it was just shocking that, I mean, the whole thing is shocking. And the first thing I thought was, wow, that's pretty ballsy of him to not reveal that. But then as the week went on and we learned more, we realized that, you know, we have to wonder about Casey Cagle's involvement in it as a member of the board of the bank. And then those polls come out. And, I mean, this is a really good example of the importance of being ready if something goes wrong with your opponent, I think. I mean,
yeah.
And I'm so glad that Roy Barnes is ready. I mean, I think.
Yeah.
But Amy knows a lot more about this. She's been reading those documents. And
I've been.
Yeah,
I was
piece by piece. Let's get ahead of ourselves in the polls. Amy, what was your thoughts?
I think that Nathan Deal needs to come clean with Georgia. I think that he needs to be willing to release his entire tax returns. He wants us to trust his congressional financial disclosures to fill in the gaps, and now we learn that the financial disclosure that he filed when he was running for governor of Georgia this time had inaccuracies in it. I don't know how he can then expect voters to trust the documents that he that he's pointing us to. I think the questions that Nathan Deal is not answering right now are as important as the ones he is answering. So when a reporter asks when he knew of his son-in-law's bankruptcy, and his answer is no answer, I think that tells us a great deal. I think when he's willing to say, acknowledge the bankruptcy, but then won't talk about his own conduct, his own knowledge, and then instead points back and says, my family is not running for office, I think that's terribly disingenuous because it's actually his conduct that deserves scrutiny and that I think voters have an obligation to examine. I felt kind of sorry for Nathan Deal for about 15 minutes when this story initially broke because I'm a parent. Not that I ever have had $2 million invested in anything, in my children or anything else, but I can imagine wanting to help my child as much as I could and then being left holding the bag. But as these details came out about the bankruptcy, the failure to disclose it, and apparently Cagle being on the board of the bank that made the original loan, and on Cagle's financial disclosures to the state of Georgia that he filed in 2006 as lieutenant governor, and then reflecting his activity in 2005, he lists his activities with that bank, with Gainesville Bank and Trust, as a director, which would be his board position, and his activity is management. Now, I don't know about you, but if I had a friend on the board at the bank who was in a management position and I was looking to get a $500,000 loan to help out my children my son-in-law had to file bankruptcy, and I was going to get that loan, I think I might call my friend just to say, by the way, I'm going to your bank to apply for a loan, just wanted to let you know. But Cagle says he had no knowledge of that. I guess voters have to figure out if they believe that or not.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing I thought about pretty quickly, I mean, if I were Nathan Deal and my son-in-law came to me and said, hey, I've got this great idea. I want to open this superstore that sells fishing and hunting equipment for people that want to do outdoors activities. I'd say, yeah, that sounds like an awesome idea. Then I'd put him in my car truck. I'd drive him 30 minutes down the road from Gainesville and see. They've already got it. It's called Bass Pro Shops. So why is people going to go to your little place in Gainesville that's not Bass Pro Shops and they can drive 30 minutes down to the road to, like, the leading store of its kind? Tell me. And then, you know, basically he would figure out that's a bad business model. And then why is a bank going to loan somebody money for something that does not look like a good business proposition?
Well, I think the question is why is Nathan Deal different than the rest of us? You know, he wants to say he's like the rest of us, but I don't think I don't know about the two of you, but I don't think that I could walk into a bank in Macon with Nathan Deal's finances as disclosed to us in his income tax returns and get a loan for $2 million.
No.
In fact, I think I want Nathan Deal to do my taxes for me because he seems to have a knack for reducing his tax liability and enhancing his investments in a way that I just don't have talent for. The real question for voters is going to be why should Nathan Deal get treated any differently than the rest of us? And why should he expect to be, and as governor, how does this compromise him if he's elected?
Well, and you have to wonder, with all this looming, won't he be awfully distracted? I mean, this is that loan I think is due in like February or something. So you have to wonder what kind of distractions he'll be facing once if he does get elected, once he takes office, he'll have all this financial problems looming, and you just can't help but wonder how that would affect his performance as governor. At least that's what I think about. When I look at it, I think, well, how's he going to be able to be the governor if he's got all this stuff going on? But the other thing think is really interesting is, as far as Casey Cagle, I think that this idea that, well, I didn't know anything about that, that loan to Nathan Deal, I think that plays bad for him, too. I mean, here he's supposed to be a member of the board of directors at a bank that, I can't imagine that the Bank of Gainesville is a huge bank. So, I mean, it's not like a, you know, Wachovia or something. So he says, well, I didn't know anything about that. Well, why didn't you know anything about that? What was your role? What kind of leadership were you providing? And if you didn't know about that, and then if you did know about it, why did you, you know, why was it approved? So I think that can play for negative for him in both ways, whether he did or didn't know about it.
Well, and Catherine, I'm going to tell you, I think Casey Cagle, you have to give him a pass. I mean, he's got this back.
I'm not giving him a pass.
That is so, no. This back ailment is so debilitating. He cannot run for governor of Georgia, but yet it does not affect his performance and ability to run a half marathon. I mean, that is a big medical problem that he had to take care of. I mean, that's vexing, don't y'all think?
Well, I think the other piece of this is that Cagle was apparently in the middle of the deal Bart Graham conversation about whether or not Deal was going to be able to continue to get an exclusive deal with the state on his business. And I think that if Cagle was on the board of directors of a bank that had a financial stake in Nathan Deal, that offers a reason why Cagle might have been concerned about Nathan Deal's financial status. And so I think there are a lot more questions than answers right now, and I think that that voters deserve to see the documents. And I'm not holding my breath that they're going to release them, but I think voters ought to be asking for both Cagle and Deal to be straight up. And you can keep going down the ticket on the Republican side, by the way, if you want to talk about ethical issues. I mean, you know, Mark Butler. He doesn't have a halo and wings either. And then, of course, you have Hudgens, who has had significant ethical challenges himself. This sort of is a theme that runs through the ticket.
Yes, and you know, I think we've had on Eric Gray, and he's highlighted some of these issues from some of these folks. Now, one thing, I have a fix for this. Nathan Dill's got these major financial issues looming, and he needs some income. Now, I did see the tax returns of Roy Barnes. The Barnes Law Firm is quite, you know, financially well set. They seem to make money, you know, at a pretty good clip. Nathan Dill, I've seen him say that he was a judge. I believe he has a law degree. If Roy Barnes is busy being governor for the next 4 years, that means he can't run the Barnes Law Firm. Nathan Dill could step in and help out the Barnes Law Firm, make some good money, clear up this financial mess he's got, and then Roy Barnes could take care of Georgia, which he's probably a little better suited to do. I mean, I just like to be a problem solver sometimes.
Well, I appreciate that, although I have to tell you that if it were my business, law firm or otherwise, I can't imagine putting Nathan Dill in charge of it, which is really the issue that we have to look at when it comes to who we're going to choose to be our next governor. And, you know, we're all Democrats, but the bottom line is that this is really not a partisan issue. This is an issue of competence and who's ready to lead on day one. A state that is going to be facing some of the most difficult days that you can imagine. Who's going to be willing to make the hard decisions? Who's going to be able to make the right decisions? And you can say what you want about Governor Barnes's first term, some people happy, some people not, never afraid to make a decision. And one of the smartest men I've come across. I mean, just he has an encyclopedic knowledge of government and what needs to happen in terms of the issues of, you know, the things that he talks about, water, transportation, education, in the state.
Yes, I mean, he's definitely, I think we've said it over and over, his theme ought to be, I'm a doer. Now, let's kind of go to the next phase of this whole story. Then, about a day or two after the Nathan Dill finances come out, an Insider Vantage poll comes out that shows the race at 42-42. Nathan Dill has fallen, if you believe that's using roughly the same methodology, like 14 points, which, as Amy, you alluded to earlier, it wasn't the same methodology. But you could tell that this is starting to hurt Nathan Dill. The only problem I see is it didn't seem to help Roy Barnes. He kind of stays with this 42-43 ceiling poll after poll, no matter what comes out on Nathan Dill. The folks have gone to the undecided column, but they don't go into the Roy Barnes column. What's your thoughts on this Insider Vantage poll showing the race tied?
To me?
Yeah.
I think that the information that came out regarding Dill's finances last week is just beginning to seep into the consciousness of the electorate. And I think there's more time. I think with a little more time, you're going to see movement toward Barnes.
That's what I think too, and I think there's got to be more information coming out because there's still so many questions. Like you said earlier, Amy, there's still a lot of questions. So as that information comes out, if it's well reported, then I think that Roy Barnes will benefit from Nathan Dill's problems.
Yes, and, you know, it's also heartening from my perspective to see the investment from the Democratic Governors Association in the race. That should tell you something about how they see the chances. They don't spend $1 million on a pipe dream. There's no question that Roy Barnes is in a position to win this race, but we're going to have to all work very hard between now and the election day to turn out voters so that will happen, and that's why I'm working on the coordinated.
So and that's the thing that concerns me. That's the thing that concerns me is that I think there are people who just figure, oh, well, you know, they're all a bunch of crooks, and why do I even bother? And that, unfortunately, I think that they may stay home. So we have to, I think you're absolutely right, that we have to make the argument that they aren't all the same, and that it can make a difference if you get out and vote for Roy Barnes and Carol Porter and the rest of the Democratic candidates, that we can see a turnaround in our economy and a better Georgia for the future if we get out there and vote now.
Right.
Yeah, and Catherine, back to that same question, though, Roy Barnes is at 42% again. I mean, all the tightening of the race was completely Nathan Deal's numbers collapsing. What can be done to get Roy Barnes closer to 50? I mean, that's, to me, he's almost, Roy Barnes is almost, and Democratic candidates in general, in Georgia, it's almost like the guy that goes out and weightlifts every day, works hard, you know, eats right, gets enough sleep, and then goes to max out on their bench press, and it's the same as it was last month. They do the right things, but the results don't show. What can we, you know, to me, if somebody can answer this question, they probably have a job then on Roy Barnes' campaign team for the next 6 weeks. What can be done to push it up from 42-43%?
Well, I think there are a couple of things to consider. One is that in the first poll, the 11 Live poll that came out, they calculated African-American turnout at 23%, and I believe in the Insider Advantage poll, even they were calculating African-American turnout at 24% of the electorate, not of registered voters. So that's the terms I'm talking about. In 2008, African-American turnout in Georgia was nearly 30%. Now, I don't expect 30% turnout, nor do we need that for our candidates to win. But we fully expect, and that's part of what we're working toward in the coordinated campaign, to push African-American turnout in the election to 26-27%. That will make a difference in Roy Barnes' numbers and everybody else's numbers if that happens.
Catherine?
I think that's an important thing, and I also think that it takes us back to our earlier discussion about Georgia women vote and getting the women's vote out. Because I think that, and especially African-American women, I think that can make a huge difference in our final results. And that's why I was really heartened to learn about the Georgia Women Vote Initiative, because I do think, I agree with Amy 100%, that women can make the difference this time, and we need to make sure they understand that and understand the impact that they can have and the power that they will wield once we elect those three statewide women and Roy Barnes together.
Yes. Go ahead.
I'll tell you also, voter enthusiasm for Nathan Deal is tanking. You know, we had we were graced with Michael Steele being in Macon yesterday, and the talk was all about Austin. Excuse me, my phone is ringing in the background. I apologize. talk was all about Austin Scott and not so much about Nathan Deal. The reason I think that's important, is because we have, I'm hearing from Republican friends. Yes, I have Republican friends. Let's put that up right there. I'm hearing from Republican friends very tepid support for Nathan Deal. I'm hearing them talk about, you know, it's sort of a hold your nose and vote kind of attitude right now. That's not good for him. That depresses his electorate, and it actually hurts the entire rest of the ticket for them. So
yeah, Michael Steele was in Macon.
He was in Macon with his bus and his Fire Pelosi, you know, stuff is because of Marshall's race. Yes, he was here yesterday. I was not able to actually get out to the rally, but I did read about it in the Macon paper today. So, yes, I think that there's going to be a lot of attention on these congressional races in some ways. What I'm hearing, and if you just sort of look over at some of the Republican blogs, they have changed the conversation to the congressional races. They don't want to talk about Nathan Deal anymore.
Yeah, but it may be that they just want to not talk about it, then somehow just the Republicanness of Georgia carries him through. And that brings me to the third poll. And this is kind of a two-phase poll. The AJC and other papers around the state commission Mason Dixon to do a poll. It shows Nathan Deal 45, Roy Barnes 41. Now, of course, within the margin of error, the horse race numbers, this race could be tied. Roy Barnes could even be ahead a point or two. But once again, he's at 41%. You know, he's, no matter how bad the news is on Nathan Deal, that people move off of Nathan Deal, but they don't move on to Roy Barnes. And then you look inside the numbers, and you're talking about African-American turnout, Roy Barnes is doing quite well. I mean, 83%, 8% undecided. Nathan Deal's only getting 5. I mean, you know, Roy Barnes will probably get the lion's share of that 8%, taking his number somewhere to near 90 among African-American voters. But then among white voters, he's getting 27%. I've always heard that the magic number in Georgia, a white candidate has to get somewhere in the high 30s, if not maybe 40. I mean, losing 60-40 among the white vote, but he's still pretty far off on the white vote. What does Roy Barnes need to do to make up that ground? Either one of you can take that first.
I'll go. I think you know, like we've said, I think there's more to come out about Nathan Deal, and as more comes out, I think that we will see a shift in those numbers, but it might not be enough just on its own. I think Governor Barnes is doing the right thing. You know, he's out there, he's around, he's on TV. I think he could freshen up his image a little bit, but I don't know how easy that is to do. But I think that some of it is going to be dependent on how these this Nathan Deal story is covered by the news media. And
well,
hopefully that – go ahead, Amy.
No, it's okay. Hopefully. I'm sorry.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I don't know – you know, I don't read the AJC every day. I watch local news in the morning, and I'll be interested to see this week how they cover it. I watch a couple different channels during the morning when I'm getting ready for work. It'll be interesting to see how they cover it. But also, I think Governor Barnes has to be more than just not Nathan Deal. He has to, you know, come out. Maybe he needs to come out with Carol Porter if she's willing, and you know,
mm-hmm.
show what he has to offer in a very clear and distinct way.
Right. I think making his case is important, making his own case, and I thought he did a good job in two ways with that last week. One was with his comments to the AJC about the economy, where we are, where we're going, and the hope that he sees for recovering. I think that was an important message, and I loved the fact that while Nathan Deal was having to deal with his own financial issues, Barnes was able to, his story about Barnes was about his substantive comments about what we need to do to get people back to work in Georgia. Also last week, Barnes was in Macon for a couple of events, and the first one was a press closed event for local for teachers from Middle Georgia, and he met with about 70 teachers who made it over there by 4 o'clock. I mean, that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. Think about it. You're end of the school day, you've got duty, but they came from Bibb County, from Monroe County, from Houston County, and he dialogued with them. I was there, and he dialogued with them for an hour and a half. He answered every question they put to him, and as I scroll through the teachers that I know who are on Facebook, I literally have teachers who are either independent or Republican-leaning teachers who've changed their profile pictures, photographs of them with Roy Barnes. That's huge.
That's huge.
That community communicates with each other. And so that was a very enlightening hour and a half that I spent listening to that conversation between Governor Barnes and these educators. They said the person who introduced him was Michelle Gowan, who's a teacher here in Bibb County, and she stood up and she said, "I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat, but I'm a voter. and I vote based on education issues, and I have vetted these candidates. And that literally, Michelle sent me a message earlier in the year and said, what's Barnes going to do about restoring the pay for the nationally board certified teachers that was promised to them? And I sent her to the website, and I got a statement from the campaign, and she said, not good enough. I want to know exactly what he's going to do. Well, the next time I heard from Michelle, Governor Barnes had called her cell phone, called her, and had the conversation with her. And she asked him then if he would come to Macon and do this forum with teachers, and he did it. And so I think he's been doing that all over the state. So
well, that's really important because, you know, he lost a lot of traction with teachers in 2006 or in 2000.
Right. 2002. And I do think I do think that Sonny Perdue has done an incredible job at helping repair Roy Barnes' image with teachers. I mean, basically, it was a lesson learned the hard way. Anything that teachers didn't like about Roy Barnes in 2002, all these furlough days and just draconian cuts, have just made that pale in comparison. So it's basically an improvement by contrast. But I will tell you, since I've put these tough questions over and over, I do think Roy Barnes has done a lot of negative campaign ads. I do think now a lot of the news media may fortunately tote the water on the negative stuff on Casey Cagle because it is so juicy and intriguing and it's got sizzle. Now he can go back and try to do more positive ads about himself. And I think he thinks, I was governor, people know who I am, but then a lot of that was the character of the rat that the Republicans, you know, spent so long trying to create, that he now needs to talk about the image of a doer, you know, somebody that's successful. And that may contrast to particularly Deal and maybe others in the Republican side. I mean, I think he needs to go back now and do some positive politics because, you know, the job may have been let's take Casey Cagle, Nathan Deal under 50%, but that job's accomplished. Now he's got to do something to boost himself up, and to me it can only come now through some positive ads.
Well, and I think it's important, you know, people may think that he may think that people know who he is, but it's been 8 years, and then it's been 8 years since he left the governor's office. So he needs to, you know, remind us again. I mean, even me, that was really the first election that I got involved in politics in Georgia was when he was running and when Max was running. So, and I don't have a good image. I mean, even as an active Democrat that I am, I don't have a good image of what, and I don't have any image of what it was when Roy was governor, except that last, you know, 3 or 4 months when he took so much heat because of the flag and because of the teachers and all that stuff. So while he may think that people know who he is, he needs to remind us, and he needs to remind us not of who he was, but who he is now.
Yes, and another reason I think that's so important is the RGA just apparently has cut 2 ads. I haven't seen them on TV, but I've saw them on the internet. The RGA, it's all trying to tie the Barnes apology tour with Barack Obama, and the 1 ad that, you know, described who Barack Obama was, this heavy-handed politician that stuck, you know, policies down the throats of people. I was sitting there going, that didn't sound like Barack Obama to me, but it's this weird ad. But they're going to try to then go negative on Roy Barnes now, so he's got to embolden his image with something positive to contrast it. Now, the last piece of this, and the end of the Saturday poll, it says, upcoming story, Sunday, distrust of Democrats runs deep in Georgia. And then you just start to look at some of the other races. And, I mean, Johnny Anderson is up 52-33 on Michael Thurman. The Casey Cagle-Carol Porter race, it's 47-28, but I guess the good news is Casey Cagle's still 350. He's only 2 up over Deal. And there's just more undecideds in that vote, that race. So if pretty much every vote that Roy Barnes gets, that Carol Porter gets, then she's going to come up. But as far as the Senate race, That's pretty, you know, grim news. Wouldn't y'all agree?
Yeah, it's pretty grim.
It comes back to turnout. Again, it comes back to turnout, and the question is it going to be enough to trickle out? And we have we have a tough road to hoe. Here's a big surprise: Georgia's a red state, or sort of a purple state, depending on how you look at it. So no one should be shocked that Democrats are going to have to work to win. We're going to have to work to win, turn out our voters between now and November, and to encourage people that this is a critical election, because it is. And I don't just mean because of redistricting, and the thing that I see as being on the knife's edge are our public schools. I mean, we already have communities in Georgia that aren't going to school 180 days a year. You know, I mean, we literally are cutting out instruction time for children. And how are we going to attract business to the state if we don't? If we don't have a governor for whom education is a priority, and if we don't have a senator who can also work on that end on these issues with us, very important.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to say about that Senate race. I mean, I have not seen anything from Michael Thurman. I mean, he's just like the invisible candidate. And then this week, Johnny Isakson voted in favor of pushing the START treaty to the floor of the Senate, which really got him a lot of credit in the more progressive community. And that was a big win for Georgia in the sort of scheme of national politics on the progressive side. So I don't know what – I mean, I was shocked that he voted that way. I was flabbergasted. It was a lot. There was a lot of work going on behind the scenes for that, with a lot of different organizations, Georgia One being one of the most prominent. But you know, I think that those kind of, you know, the progressive voter who looks at, you know, Michael Thurman, who hasn't been visible at all, and then sees that Johnny Isakson voted in favor of something that they were really that was really important to them. It gives everyone pause, I think.
Sure. Yeah, that's one thing I think Johnny Isakson, just scared as can be, of the rabid right-wing Republican Tea Party movement or something just sitting on their hands for him. I think he's more scared of that than he is Georgians switching from Republican to Democrat. Rightly or wrongly, I believe that's his biggest fear.
Well, that may be right. I mean, it seems like across the country, the Tea Party is splitting the Republican base, and I think that's a trend that's going to continue through the 2012, and I don't think it helps them at all. I don't think that the Tea Party is peeling off a lot of Democrats. I think they're splitting the Republican base.
No, they don't help. Yeah, they don't help at all. Yeah. Now, the final number out of this poll I wanted to talk about, and then we can move on from there to a different Southern topic, and that would be in the July poll, it found that 37% of Georgians were Democrats, 33% Republicans, and Independents were 30. In the current poll, it had Republicans 42, Democrats 34, and Independents 24. Is it bad methodology on one of the two polls done by the same firm? If people really moved that drastically in the span of 2 months, or is it something else? Catherine?
I hadn't looked that closely at all that. That seems odd to me. That I wonder about the methodology. Because people, you know, identify – their party identification doesn't change that much.
One would not think. Amy, any thoughts?
Yes. I mean, here's what I think. I think that when I think people tend to think that when a party takes over, that the other party is going into the wilderness forever. I think the electorate is actually extremely fickle. I think that people identify, and I think that I'm not surprised at the shift. People are really hurting right now, And I think that they tend to blame whoever is in power. And that's a challenge for Democrats on a national level. The difference in Georgia is that it's Republicans who've been in power here. And that's where I see the opening for us, because Republicans control both the House, the Senate, the governor's office, and they had the power to make decisions that would benefit Georgians or not. And we've been building fish ponds, you know, and Nathan Deal, by the way, let me shift to that for a second. Nathan Deal has been in Congress for 18 years. He's part of this Washington problem that Georgians see. And he's not just part of the problem. In Congress for 18 years, and I believe I'm correct about this, 12 of those years he was a member of a majority party, because, you know, he's not always been a Republican. But in none of those 12 years did anyone think enough of him to make him chair of a committee. He's been chair of a subcommittee, but never put in that kind of leadership position. What does that tell you about what his colleagues thought about him?
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting note to bring up. Now, one thing I think could be part of this is in July, a lot of people were going to vote for sheriff, tax commissioner, county commission, and that they may vote more on the Democratic ticket for those races. And then now they're thinking more national and statewide races, and unfortunately they may trend a little more Republican. I think that could be part of the shift, and part of it may be a little bit different sample and a small shift. I don't think numbers shift that much either. I agree with Catherine. But I think that could be something working in here. But that is something that needs to be looked at, is what caused this. And talk about the legislature, one final number from this. Approval, disapproval, 37 approve, 37 disapprove, and 26 are not sure. That means that of the people that have an opinion, they're like, well, it may not be the Georgia legislature's fault. Although, to me, 26% of the people, you know, having no opinion of the Georgia legislature, with people like Glenn Richardson and his scandals in charge of it, it seems like people would have a little more of an opinion than that. But I just don't think a lot of Georgians have caught on. Well, I think we have time for probably one more good topic. And this past week, even though Delaware is, you know, not considered a southern state, Christine O'Donnell, one of the most fascinating candidates there is, like her or dislike her, she's interesting to watch, won the Senate primary, a Tea Party candidate, over Mike Castle, who apparently is a very moderate Republican and was just going to cruise to victory, most pundits predicted. Well, she upset him. And now people are comparing her win to that of Alvin Green's over Vic Raw back in earlier in the summer in South Carolina. Catherine, what do you see the likes and dislikes there?
Well, I can kind of understand the comparison. I mean, that woman is pretty crazy. I don't know if you all watch Bill Maher, but she was a guest on his show a number of times back in the 90s, and he's got all this footage of her, and he's asking her to come on his show, and if she doesn't, he's going to release that footage, like, every week until she agrees to be on, and some of it is pretty damning.
Yeah, her witchcraft date that was, like, her first date. That's
they
the
showed
first
that on Friday
yeah,
night.
The first piece he's released. I don't know if he led with the best, or that's just...
Oh, no, I think there's a lot. But, I mean, as a Democrat, it makes me happy because I think it puts that seat back in, you know, strong Democrat territory.
It looks like we're going to win it. Although, Catherine, did you know that the polls are actually showing it's like a 9-point race? Amazingly, it's not like in the bag at this point. Although I have a feeling that enough of this footage and probably just what she says from here to November will put it there, but
she's not tanking
like Green.
Not yet. Canceling appearances. She was supposed to be on Meet the Press or one of those shows, and she canceled her appearance
if it's outside Delaware and it's not Fox. Sarah Palin has advised her not to come on. That's her media advisor, by the way. That says a lot. Amy, what's your take on this comparison?
I think that I think that it's interesting. I think it illustrates the Republican Party's problem when it comes to the Tea Party. I'm so glad they're not our problem. I think that they haven't quite figured out what to do with them. I think that they're potentially going to cost them some races in November. I think that if we want to start looking at video, we might want to, I don't know, we're probably tired of talking about him, but we might want to watch some of Nathan Deal's video, because I was looking at one of his ads from the primary where he, back in from January, where his pitch was experience you can trust.
Oh, good.
I'm thinking that that's kind of a parody now. I think she sort of has made herself a parody, and I don't think she's an Alvin Green. I think she's a product of the Tea Party movement.
And you hear about, like, she wouldn't pay bills. She had, I mean, so many campaigns have had crazy schemes to hand out crap with your name on it, but she went to order like 100,000 suntan lotions, and we are talking Delaware. We're not talking California where, you know, there's 45 million people. I mean, 100,000, what is that, like a quarter of the state would get a suntan lotion with her name on it? I mean, just bizarre stuff. But, you know, the video that I guess that's gotten around the most has been her thoughts on self-satisfying. And, then, of course, we know Alvin Green sent his photos to a lady. So maybe he can send over what he's got, and maybe she'll change her mind, or maybe she'll then be able to explain to Alvin why it's wrong to send these photos. So, once again, trying to problem solve, you know, put these two people together on the one thing that they seem to have in common through conflict, if you will. But, Amy, we sure...
interesting characters, for sure.
Yes. Amy, we're so glad enjoyed having you on the show, on the Kudzu Vine tonight. Anything else you got to tell us about going on before we close?
Yes. Last thing I'll say, I can't get off the phone without, you know, pitching that we have some key races that will win us endorsed through the end of the year. And I can't name them. I cannot name them all for you right now. But here's the bottom line: if we elect all of our candidates that we've endorsed this cycle, we'll have 5 new women serving at the state level, brand new women. And we are excited about that. So look at our website, find one of those races, and figure out how to help that particular woman get elected or keep her seat.
Yes. Well, thanks again, and Catherine, enjoyed talking with you tonight, and hope everybody
thanks,
listens and come back next week for the return of Tim.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You.
Thanks, Amy.
Good night.
Y'all have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Sure.